a shot in the dark, wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 269. Man, I'm feeling punchy today. Feeling kind of, I'm holding the mic. You know how it gets when I hold the mic? My mic arm has gone completely missing. I record in like 2-3 places. And I've resisted buying, redundant pieces of equipment. And I drag this gear around with me, right? And I was getting ready for my trip, and I have misplaced my microphone arm. So I'm holding it, and I'm in. You know what happens? I get on that. I feel like Dean Martin or something, you know, holding this microphone like an MC or something. You know, maybe Jack Benny. So, was in New York all weekend, which is basically New York weekend recap, because I did yesterday was Martin Luther King Day, and we did not do a show. So, this is going to be the weekend recap, and this weekend recap is going to be a good one, because I was in New York City at the New York Encounter of Communion and Liberation, the once a year big old fat meeting for the movement that I am the worst member of, called Communion and Liberation. And so me and the lovely and talented Jim Ducky Laurent headed off to New York and met up with the lovely and talented Katie Heil from Tatanga Bemoy and her partner Karen D'Onofrio, both from Denver. And the whole CL Denver contingent was out in full force. So good to see every one of them and get to spend a little time with them now and again. I always come away from the New York Encounter going, okay, I'm back in. These are my people. This is who I need to be. It's just, I don't know how to describe the New York Encounter. Here's how I describe it. Take like a big Catholic conference. Okay. Take all of the stuff that makes you go, oh gosh, really? Really? Just that cringy, weird, like, why are we like this guy? Yeah, subtract all that. Now, also subtract like the fear that anyone who ever has a microphone under any circumstances absolutely has to be like on the team and pushing the agenda and dialogue can actually take place. Okay, so put that there. Then just add a bunch of Italian teenagers. some really interesting human beings that do some really amazing things on stage, and put it in the middle of New York, and and then maybe add back in like some kind of slightly goofy singing that I still don't get after 5 years in the movement. I just don't understand the whole goofy song thing. It's just a part of the strange aspect of the Italian personality. I don't know, it's just part of the movement, man. They're just singing weird songs, singing goofy songs. They just love it. They love classical music too. It's just you don't see like the typical praise and worship or whatnot. You see goofy songs or like chant and like classical music. It's a strange thing. Anyway, it was a blast though. It was so fun. It's a really, really good time. I'm going to shout out / call out Pia De Salini on the show, because Pia was in New York down the street the entire weekend and did not hang out with us. Said she was going to come to the encounter. Her husband was speaking at a conference. No Pia, you know, I guess Pia is just too cool for me unless, you know, she's on the show or we're hanging, you know, I get it. You know, she's kind of a big deal, but no Pia. I was all stoked on taking Pia to the encounter. So I'm just, Pia sweated me. It hurts. You hurt me, Pia. Plus, she speaks Italian. It would have been so fun to watch her like just talking Italian to all these people. All right, so New York, whirlwind weekend. I should have, you know, I told you that I was going to drag my gear with me, maybe try to get some interviews. And as I was packing, I was like, Andrew, just don't even take this gear with you. You know that you're just going to be traveling, running around like a madman on Friday and Monday. Everyone is so busy that there's no way you're going to corner anybody for an interview. You should just try to get interviews while you're there and just make arrangements and get phone numbers and stuff. But no, I dragged all my gear with me. And how many interviews did I get while I was there? Zero. Exactly zero. Everybody was like, that sounds great. We could do it. No, I can't do it this weekend. So hopefully some really good interviews. The one I'm kind of most stoked about is John Waters. John Waters, ex-Irish rock journalist, or rock journalist. I think he's ex-Irish. Author, speaker, friend of Bono. He was either married to, or anyway, he shares a daughter with Sinead O'Connor. This guy's kind of rock royalty, you know. He's like, he's in the real deal, and he's got a beautiful talk out on YouTube if you want to go find it. He's got several beautiful talks on YouTube, but one of them's called something like Rock and Roll and the Desire for the Infinite, and it's so good. And I love listening to the guy. I'm going to talk about his talk here in a little bit. I'm going to hit a few highlights of things that just kind of hit me over the weekend, and he was one of them. But we chatted a little bit, and we're going to try to get him on for a good long interview. Should be a blast. He's a good time. But I took the gear, got no interviews while I was there. But I tell you, man, I am glad to be home this weekend. I have been on a plane or in rental cars and stuff so much the last few weeks that I am so excited to have a weekend at home. But this is a good, I mean, New York is kind of like the most intense, like it takes the most out of you, but at the same time, it really gives the most back. Like there's places in this world where it's like, wow, this is a whole other city. And then there's places where it's like, oh, this is kind of a different country, you know? And then I think there's places that are where you're like, wow, this is a different planet. You know, I was talking to my friend, Tim Ferland, just got back from India. And I was saying, it seems to me that like India would be like almost like another planet. Like the culture is so different. The things you would see, just so different. But New York City, I feel like sometimes I feel like I'm a city in another country because things are so different than what I'm used to. And it's hard. See, New York City's hard. At least on me it is. We're staying in a really nice but tiny hotel room. It's in Manhattan. Everything's small in Manhattan because it costs a lot, you know. And you just walk everywhere and you just bleed money because unless you want to like go take subways everywhere, you have to hop in a cab or an Uber or walk a long time. And by the second day, like my knees are always hurting and stuff. It's just like, you know, after 2-3 days of carrying a fat guy around New York, I was just like, I was hurting, man. Oh goodness. I step up. And then I do it. So it was fun though, but it's just, it beats you up. Like I get back from New York and like I slept hard last night and I slept in this morning. I was just like, wow. I mean, even though I kind of switched back to an earlier, you know, I guess it was maybe might've, you know, the time zone switch, you would think that if I'd gotten used to it, I'd be waking up early. I just could not get myself to get out of bed. I was just so beat up from the weekend. But it's a good kind of beat up. Like I said, it gives back, especially at the encounter. The encounter just gives back. It's so hard to get used to. Like I was annoying the hell out of Ducky all weekend because I just could not get, I can never get used to the fact that everyone just honks all the time. It drives me nuts. Like a light turns green and people start honking. It's like you're expecting a level of response that the laws of physics and inertia don't allow. If the light turns green and the person in front just guns it, if they're sitting there revving the engine and they gun it when it turns green, which they usually can't because there's pedestrians in the way, it would still take 4 or 5 seconds if you're 10, 5, 6, 7 cars back for you to be able to move. So, but everyone is like so impatient that it's honk all the time. And they're just nuts. Like, we're riding in cabs. And for the most part, the cabbies were pretty solid. Like, they know how to drive it. But they just all have, there's just a different set of rules in New York. You just turn into people and you just keep turning and you almost hit them, and either you go chicken first and they move ahead, or the way you tell someone you're wanting to turn isn't by turning your turn signal on. It's by almost hitting them. And then, but everyone, stuff that if someone did this to me in Denver, I would be honking like crazy and flipping people off or just getting mad or something. Not really. I would never do that. But in New York, these cabbies just like look at each other and smile. You almost hit me. That's, oh, you're telling me you need to get in. Yeah, well, I'm not going to let you in. Okay, you're going to get in behind me. Okay, cool. You almost hit me. It drives me nuts. It takes me a couple of days to not be on edge around the traffic and all the honking and everything. I never get used to the honking. And just like the constant, just like walking and all this, so many people on the streets and stuff. It's invigorating, but it's like an action sport. Like, it wears me out after a while. Also, I just need solitude sometimes. Solitude's hard to come by in New York. So New York City this weekend. All right. So when we get back, I want to talk about food. I want to talk about the coffee. I want to talk about the talks and who I met. And we're going to talk about New York City, New York Encounter Weekend. You're listening to The Counter Position. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley, holding the mic.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so New York City this weekend. And every time I go to New York, I have like some bucket list things that I want to get done, places I want to see. I only had two things on my list. This time around, I wanted to go see the La Colombe and NoHo and check out their customer flow. And the other thing I wanted to do was, so there's a guy here in Denver that I'm really good friends with. He's a former kind of mentor and professor of mine, a Catholic leader here in the area. And I won't embarrass him by saying his name, but he told me a few years ago that I'm number two on his prayer list. And what he means is he gets up every morning and he prays. And he prays for, number one on his prayer list, Pope Francis. The Pope. It goes, the Pope, me. And just the Lord put me on his heart. And he just has me on his list, man. He just prays for me. And it's worked. I mean, it's helped. I can feel it sometimes. I really need it. That's a good point for me to insert here. Pray for me. If you're a listener, I need it. Pray for me. But this guy prays for me, and I'm number two on his list. And this is the scripture says the fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And I don't know many better men than this guy. This guy is a real stand-up guy, the real deal, has a real relationship with Christ, really solid man, and an amazing human being. And for some reason, God put me on his heart, and I'm number two on his prayer list. So this guy grew up in New York. He asked me a few years ago, he heard I was going to New York for something, and I ended up not going to the encounter last year, year before. Been a couple years since I went. And he was like, hey, would you say a prayer for me? We say a Hail Mary for me and St. Catherine's. It's where I grew up. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I go to my second on my bucket list was to go to this church, St. Catherine of Siena. It seemed like it's a Dominican parish. There's a priory there. And say a prayer and say some prayers for this, this man. So that was like my, that was my two bucket lists. I also wanted to see the Catholic Worker, the original Catholic Worker in Union Square. And I didn't make it this time around. We just ran out of time. So, but then there's things that happened that would have been on the bucket list had you known. And the couple of those happened. So we got in on Friday night, got a cab, and it's just always like, I don't know how to describe it. There are moments in your life when you're someone like me that grew up in a small town, and you know, I don't travel a whole lot until like the last 6 months to a year. I've been traveling a lot. There's things that you do that just kind of make you feel like a grown up or like a real guy doing a real thing in the world. You know, I don't know how to describe it. It's like, oh, I'm playing in the real game. I'm doing this, you know. One of those things is, you know, I remember one of those things that I thought of was playing blackjack in a casino and using the hand motions to for hit me or stay and, like, you know, ordering a free scotch or something like you see in a movie. I remember the first time I put a suit on, walked into a casino, changed out a $20 bill and just played blackjack for a couple of hours. I felt like I was the king of the universe. I was like, I'm a grown man. I can play blackjack. I could drink a grown man's drink at a casino. But one of those things is hailing a cab. I can remember the first time I hailed a cab. It's something you see in movies all the time. But when you grow up in Deloge, Missouri, with a town of 4,000 people in the middle of nowhere, you don't hail a lot of cabs. I mean, there are cabs, but you call one. And the only people I knew who took cabs were like my old aunt, who, when she needed to go to do laundry and there was no one to take her, would call this one man that had a cab and he would come pick her up at an appointed time and take her over there, you know? So we get off the plane, LaGuardia, everyone on earth, I mean, literally like every type of human being on earth is in LaGuardia. And you go out on the, you step out onto the curb and it's just like absolute chaos. Like, it makes the Denver airport look like Santa Barbara. It's just like, there's so many cars and so many people and so many cabs and it's just like feverish. Right. And you know, you throw your hand up, boom, cab done. And then there's like that, like, oh, how much is this going to cost? How much? I mean, you're like, you're just kind of worried about it. You know, it's like, and you know that it's pretty much going to be $35 to $45 to get down to Manhattan. It always is. So just exhale. But I'm always like sitting there watching the meter, you know, worried about how much this thing's going to cost. So we get a cab, we go get to our hotel. Hotel's kind of cool. Like, the closest hotel that had a decent rate, was the Hilton in the Fashion District. This is kind of cool. It's got a rooftop bar, a cool restaurant. I was kind of rolled in, you know, like, hey, what's up? You know, I'm a Hilton Honors member, so they're like giving me water and stuff. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. You know, I kind of feel like, all right. So I'm kind of feeling like, you know, I've hailed a cab. I've taken a cab into Manhattan. I roll in, you know, with my bags into a cool hotel. I'm kind of feeling like a grown man there. And so then we went out looking for some food. And we decided at the last minute to go to Cat's Delicatessen. So Cat's Delicatessen was not on my bucket list. It should have been on my bucket list. I mean, I don't know. It's not just a pastrami. This is life-changing pastrami. This is like, you don't, there are things that beef can do, you know, that you didn't realize it can do. Like, great pastrami, and I don't say this lightly, is like bacon. I mean, it's just like, it's so flavorful and so savory and so good. And so we get these huge pastrami sandwiches. There's got to be like a pound of meat on this thing. It's just like meat, two pieces of rye bread, and these amazing pickles. And, you know, you got to take a ticket and wait and get in this line and all stuff. And it's like this place has just been there forever. And I got these signs. You see people wearing shorts say, send a salami to a boy in the army. It's just like, and you got these cut, you can line up, there's different cutters, cutter one, cutter two, and they're like cutting meats and stuff. And there's places you can get matzo ball soup and knishes and all this stuff. Just total old school New York Jewish deli. And it is spectacular. That pastrami is absolutely life changing. And so we went and did that. And then we went over to McSorley's. McSorley's is the oldest bar in New York, I think. And it's just, you see these places where there's like tons of crap all over the walls and everything. And you're like, oh, you kind of decorated it like this. No, this is like literally like someone stuck something up and it stayed there for over 100 years. There is a poster that someone stuck on the wall that's still there. That is a campaign poster for Theodore Roosevelt running for vice president. And it's just like, it's just been there forever. And there's this chandelier over the bar. And someone like found out somebody got killed in World War II or something. And it was World War I. I mean, so they had a wishbone from a turkey or a chicken or something. They hung it up on this chandelier for that guy that got killed. So they'd remember him for some reason. And people started doing that. So there's this chandelier with all these wishbones on it. And that's weird, right? But, and it hadn't been dusted in like 100 years. And so it was just covered. It was kind of a thing you would go see, is this old chandelier with all these wishbones on it, like cut caked with like an inch of dust for, you know. Finally, the health department suggested strongly that they clean it because it's over the bar where people are being served. But so they had to clean it. So I kind of liked it because I was able to see what it was better. But just checking all the different stuff out on the walls, and there's a bar, sawdust on the floor, and they serve, you know, soda and water and like a couple of sandwiches. But for alcoholic drinks, this bar has two things, light and dark. It's McSorley's Ale House, and they have two beers, light and dark. That's it. I love places with limited menus. I love Proof Rock Coffee in London. I love Una Pizza Napolitana in San Francisco. I love places that just do a couple things that do it really well. And they're like, this is what we got. This is what we do. If you like it, come. This place is slammed. And when you order a light or a dark, you get like these two glasses. They give you two of them. And they're kind of small mugs. And just all night long, everybody's like, you know, I need six dark. I need seven light. You know, and you just, they're just filling them, washing these mugs, and just everyone in the place is slammed. And you could tell it's slammed with kind of like regulars, right? And it has been slammed. This bar has been in New York long, just right about as long as there's been like Irish people in New York. And it's just been slammed with regulars drinking these two beers. That's it. And it was amazing. I love spaces that are the record of the development of real community. And McSorley's is a real community. And I'm looking at my notes and I'm going to have to start covering stuff a little more. I don't have to, I can finish this show tomorrow or something. We can talk about New York all week. Who cares? Cause I'm nowhere near the end of my deal here. All right. So, when we get back, I want to talk a little bit about a few moments I had at the encounter. And I want to talk about a few of the coffee places we hit, and I want to talk about some food that we experienced, and I want to talk about a kind of a divine appointment that happened to me. So you're listening to The Counterposition. This is the New York recap episode. I am your host, Andrew Whaley, and we'll see you on the other side.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we've talked about cabs and about all kinds of crazy stuff and about McSorley's and Cat's Delicatessen. Oh, goodness. Life-changing pastrami. I just want to say that. I think I'm going to entitle this entire episode Life-Changing Pastrami. We went back on Friday, took Tim Furlan. There was a big, long line to get in for lunch. Tim was kind of like, come on, let's go someplace else. I'm really hungry. I'm like, no, it's worth it. And we waited through this big, long line. We got in there. And Jim and I got this like meat, like a combo platter that had the brisket, the pastrami, and the corned beef. All of them good. The corned beef, really good. Brisket, pretty good. This is going to be sacrilege. I kind of like my brisket better, but slightly different style. Not my braised brisket, not my smoked brisket. That would be comparing apples and oranges. But the pastrami is just life changing. Anyway, I'm going to shut up about this life changing pastrami. Cat's Delicatessen, life changing pastrami. All right, so we weren't there for life changing pastrami. At least we didn't think we were. We were there for the New York encounter of Communion and Liberation 2017. And so there's all these talks, and then there's these exhibits, and then there's the presentation of these exhibits sometimes. And so then you just go to these things, and there's just no way to hit everything. I've learned to just exhale and miss some stuff, and most of it gets filmed and ends up on the website, and there's things you miss and you're like, you know what? You just miss things in this world. And there's a couple things I missed that I wished I hadn't missed, but I caught a lot of what I wanted to see. So I want to hit a few of the highlights, and then maybe later on after they get this all back up, I'll put a link to New York Encounter's page, and then but a lot of this, I haven't checked to see if it's up yet, but they film all this stuff and it goes up on YouTube. So if something, I'm just going to kind of give you my quick take on a few of the things that I saw. I'm going to do one segment, if I can, on the actual encounter and what we did and what I saw there. And then you can go to YouTube and you can actually watch a bunch of these talks, and it's really worth doing. And then I'll see you there next year. And maybe we should have a counterposition meetup at Cat's Deli next year, and we'll record it, and we'll have life changing pastrami on the air. Because we got there, and the first thing that happened was a kind of a witness. They have these things called witnesses, where someone just kind of tells their story and tells how they came to the movement, how they came, why they're there, kind of who they are, what God has done in their life. But it's not like, it's not usually your typical thing that you would hear, like some kind of it is a testimony, but it's not, they're just people that are attracted to CL have a little different take on things. And it's not like your typical cheesy, just boring conversion story. I hate to say that. There shouldn't be anything boring about a conversion story, but sometimes they can just become so just like, I had the wrong ideology. And then I had a crisis, and then I acquired the new ideology, and now I live in this ideology. That's not what this is about. So anyway, the first thing was this witness by Richard Cabral. Now, Richard Cabral is an actor. He's in American Crime. He's been in a bunch of movies. But Cabral was discovered as an actor while he was working in the bakery at Homeboy Industries. Now, Homeboy Industries is ran by, what's the guy's name? Father Greg, I think his name is. It's a Jesuit guy that started this thing. And he started with a bakery, then it's moved to different things. And he gives jobs to people who are gang members or ex-gang members trying to get their life together. And so Richard Cabral had grown up like straight up in gang life. Like for several generations, his family had been in it. And he had gotten his girl pregnant, and then he ended up going down, and he was in jail for 5 years for being part of a gang shooting. And when he got out, he ended up going to Homeboy Industries and getting a job in this bakery. And what was so beautiful and so amazing is he just kind of like talked about how he didn't know what he was doing or where he was going, but he just knew that just this, he just kind of came to a point of reality and just, this would not work anymore. This just, he didn't know how this was going to work, but he knew this wouldn't work. And so he was just going to do something else. And he was just going to not do that. And he made this decision to take this job, and he went over there and they gave him a job and he started working in this bakery. And while he was working there, he ended up being discovered as an actor. And now he's kind of this big time actor guy, right? But it was just interesting. It sounds so simple, but just looking at your life and looking at what you're doing and coming to a point of just real reality and going, you know what? This just isn't working anymore. This is not what I want. This is not how I want to live. This is not who I want to be. This is just not sustainable. I'm going to do something else, you know? So that was amazing. And then they did this thing that I almost skipped. It was a staged presentation of the life of Helen Keller. And it's kind of a dramatized Helen Keller thing. And then I heard my friend Emily Green had written it. And I love Emily Green. She is one of the most amazing human beings I know. She's so talented and so sincere and so real. She's just an amazing person. She's part of the CL group here in Denver. And so I was like, okay, well, if Emily did this, I'm going to go, you know, and it was amazing. Please God that they filmed that and they're going to put it. And maybe they'll take it on the road or something. This little girl who was the actress was amazing. This child actress that played young Helen Keller was incredible. But the way that they interspersed her writings next to the stage dramatizations and music and stuff, it was spectacular. It was absolutely amazing. And it was just amazing to hear her talking about who she was and what her internal experience was and what happened to her when her teacher broke through to her and she began to learn and be able to connect the limited amount of sense experience that she had to the world and understand what was outside of her and what these things were and the existence of things. The existence of people and things. It was just absolutely incredible. There was an economic forum on Saturday morning early that was just the person who until very recently was the head of Catholic Relief Services that was sponsored by the Kellogg Institute. And they were just talking about the big, big global picture of economics and globalization and poverty and how to like lift people out of poverty and how to impact a society and kind of the role of entrepreneurship and business in that. And it was absolutely amazing. It was really, really incredible. And it was the whole time I didn't know if Katie Heil was there and I kept going, man, I hope Katie is listening to this because they were just talking about what she's doing with Tatanga Bamoy. And I love the idea that she was sitting there with an entire room listening to these people saying, this is the answer. And she's sitting there saying, that's how I live my life. That's what I'm doing with my life is that answer they're talking about. I was so proud to know her and so proud to have that she had followed, you know, came to the event because of our friendship, you know? And then, there was, another event that just kind of struck me. And that was, there was, the Art of Science, they called it. And there was, one of the scientists that was on the team that discovered evidence of, gravitational waves quite recently, gave a presentation about that. And there was a woman who's an immunologist who has developed an entire new model of how the immune system works called the danger model. And it was absolutely incredible. And it was just amazing to see this man in the wonder with which he spoke about the life of being a scientist and how they, and he, you know, and how they proved this thing that, you know, that Einstein had predicted by discovering gravitational waves and actually catching evidence of them and checking them and all that, and how amazing it was. But then it was really cool to listen to the history of the development of the immune model from this woman, right? But then what was so funny, she was talking about how crippled we were by our presuppositions about these previous models and these answers that we thought we had. And then people were just trading in what they already knew, and they were just kind of ignoring evidence. And this woman was an atheist. And in the middle of this, saying this, she says, at one point she says, "Now, I know probably most of you don't believe in evolution, but I do." And then, and there was literally a snicker from the crowd, because the CL crowd is not the religious part of the religious world that's that worried about whether or not evolution is the means by which God created something. In fact, I would say most people in the audience are a firm believer in evolutionary theory. And then later on, she went on this whole big diatribe about Copernicus and just traded in these old tropes and memes that have just been disproven. That's just simply not what happened. That was not the reality. So it's funny. She was given this incredible, incredible talk about overcoming pre-existing, you know, presuppositions about models and stuff, and then in making that exact same mistake with regard to religion at the same time. And I'm like, gosh, if you would just use the same tools you're using on all of reality, you might end up one of us. But all right, goodness, we're out of time. Let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I've got more up my sleeve
than all the colored glass that painter's palette smash. All the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Oh, goodness. I tell you, one show is not enough to recap a weekend at the Encounter. So we're talking about New York Encounter, Communion and Liberation. I was in New York over the weekend. So many. I'm just going to end up probably all week. I'll be pulling stuff out and just kind of talking about it here and there in between the cracks. So many things that I experienced. I want to hit a few more talks real fast. Just give you the quick take on what I saw this weekend. And then I want to move on to a few of the places I visited. So I think probably my favorite talk of the entire weekend was Michael Wallstein and John Waters. Now, Michael Wallstein is a graduate of Thomas Aquinas College, not unlike myself, but has gone on and got like two doctorates and degrees in Rome and all this stuff. He's one of the smartest human beings alive. The guy is amazing. He also happens to be basically a Habsburg. In fact, at least his son explained to me, he says roughly, you know, if the old titles were in line, then his dad, he says, Michal would be about number 20 in line for the seat of the Holy Roman Empire. So this guy is like, if the old titles were in line and the monarchy was still there and 19 people got killed by a plague, this guy could be ruling Europe. He's that guy. And he's sitting on the dais with John Waters, who is a Irish rock journalist who's ran in those circles. He's friends with Bono and Bob Geldof and all those guys. He shares a child with Sinead O'Connor. He had this like total typical, like full on alcoholic life for a long time. And through AA, he came around and kind of started moving back towards a life of faith. And somewhere along the line, this turned into him being exposed to the writing of Monsignor Giuzzani. And he's become kind of a major force and face of the movement, force in and face of the movement. Just an incredibly thoughtful, amazing human being. I'm a giant fan of John Waters. But I'm not going to go into what they talked about. It's going to be filmed and you can just watch it. It's just way, way, way too much. I could do an entire show on Wallstein and Waters' conversation. There is one anecdote that he relayed that I want to talk about, John Waters did. But I just love that this is one of the things I love about Communion Liberation. It's that here is a movement. And in this movement, on stage at the same time, having a conversation and a friendship that sounds like they went out to dinner the night before and talked. And it's a real friendship developing between a dude who is 20th in line for the seat of the Holy Roman Empire, who's like this crazy famous, crazy amazing scholar. Mihail Wallstein, he translates, if you have a copy of Theology of the Body, the big thick one that says man and woman, he created them. He's the translator and wrote that beautiful introduction, which is the best introduction to Wojtyla's thought. And he has a new book in draft form kind of coming out soon called The Glory of the Lord. The Glory of the Logos in the Flesh. The Theology of the Contraception in Light of John Paul II's Theology of the Body. And it's a big 600-page von Balthasarian book about everything. And it's incredible. I've got a draft of it. And it's so good. Just the fact that these two guys are on the stage talking and really coming to some deep understanding and understanding each other and talking about the same things goes to show you that you can come at reality from different perspectives and still reality can be this love that is the common good that brings us together across very different paths. Just a beautiful thing. There was an incredible presentation by, what's that guy's name? Greg Wolf. Is that his name? The editor of Image Magazine, about Flannery O'Connor and The Ultimate Concern. And they used, film clips from, the film version of Wise Blood and recordings of her voice, reading some of their books and talking about her work and different dramatization of readings and stuff. And it was amazing. It really, 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 really showed what Flannery O'Connor was all about and how amazing she was. So if you ever get a chance to see that, if they filmed it or if they do that kind of thing at another event or something, I would go see that. And I would read everything Flannery O'Connor's ever written. Finally, the last thing that I want to talk about was, Rusty Reno, R.R. Reno, the editor, the guy that replaced Newhouse as the editor of First Things magazine, sat down with David Brooks, who is the conservative, columnist for the New York Times, which he likens to being the same thing as being the chief rabbi in Mecca. It's an honor and a target, you know, it's like, and they had a beautiful conversation. And the thing that hit me most about them was the role that limitations play in freedom. They were talking about limitations and choosing your limitations and freedom being the choosing of your limitations. And by cutting off some options for yourself by marrying or moving and settling down or picking a field and sticking, you know, they really understand the difference between the millennial kind of drivenness, but it's a drivenness out of fear because there's so many options fueled by this fear of missing out. You know, and how different their lives were in the sense that there was like this train track where you go, you get a degree, you get a job, you get married, you have kids, you retire. You know, there's a train track you're kind of on, but you take side trips and you always can kind of count on that train track, you know. And it was really, really interesting to listen to these guys talk about this notion of freedom among many, many other things. I'm very sure that was filmed and will be on the website. I'll put a link to it when it's up. The thing that I wanted to talk about, there was a great anecdote by John Waters, where he was talking about how he was praying in the morning, but he just wasn't getting anywhere. And his sponsor asked him, said, "How do you pray?" "Well, I pray these prayers." He goes, "No, well, how do you pray?" He says, "Do you pray on your knees?" And he says, "No." And he said, he tried to pray and he couldn't get his knees to bend. So he came back and he's like, I can't kneel. He couldn't make that kind of submission. He had said all the things in his, with his mouth, that he was kind of surrendering to this higher power, but he couldn't do it. And he goes, "Oh, we've had guys like you before. Here's what I want you to do. When you get up in the morning to pray, pick up your shoes, throw one of them under the bed, and then get your shoe out. And while you're getting your shoe, you're going to have to be down on your knees, digging under the bed. You're going to be on your knees on the edge of the bed. And while you're down there, pray." And I tell you, that's going to be a metaphor that I'm going to come back to over and over and over again. Throwing the shoe under the bed. Coffee. Went to La Colombe. It is a really interesting layout, La Colombe and NoHo. It's a really interesting customer service model and workflow model that I really want. It really does do what they say it does. It is high, super high touch, even traditional customer service in a cafe, and they run volume. It is an amazing, amazing place. I want to go back and map it. We just didn't have time. I took a bunch of pictures and got a couple of things and listened to some transactions. Beautiful stuff. Fika, which is a Swedish, I think, chain, looks like. I had my first cardamom bun. I know, evidently this is a thing like up north where there's a lot of, you know, Scandinavians. Cardamom bun as opposed to like a cinnamon bun. Absolutely amazing. With the Think Coffee, incredible, incredible coffee. Really kind of like cold, not very hospitable service. Telegraph Cafe right next to the event. A little dark, not amazing coffee or anything, but just really, really warm European hospitality. These people that own this place, great stuff. Finally, another bucket list item was to go to Eataly, which is Mario Batali's food hall and market. Absolutely incredible. Had a good meal there. Other food bucket list thing was, Anthony Bourdain says that not pastrami, but rather the breakfast bodega sandwich is the food of New York. It is the quintessential New York dish. And getting a bacon, egg, cheese on a roll sandwich from a bodega is like the thing. And so I walked into a bodega, got a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich on a roll. And it was spectacular. I mean, it was what it was, but it was amazing to kind of see the different takes on that kind of thing. I believe Bourdain when he talks about food. Skipping over ramen experience, halal street food. All right, so I'm going to end with this. So we go back to Cat's Deli with Tim and have more pastrami and whatnot. And I got to go up to the St. Catherine of Siena Church to pray for my friend, right? So I call for an Uber. Uber comes. It's this black guy from Haiti. And he has the exact same name as the guy that I'm going to pray for. So I get it. I'm like, oh, this is kind of a coincidence. So I get in the car and I'd ordered it through the app. And he says, are you a priest? And I'm like, why would you ask that? Oh, you're going to a church. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a long story. No, I'm not a priest, but it's been a close call a couple times. And turns out the guy's Catholic. He was in seminary in Haiti and he preached to me all the way across Manhattan about the hiddenness and the silence of Mary. It was amazing. It was a total, exactly what I needed to hear. It was just beautiful. We're out of time. I'll pick some more of this stuff up off tomorrow. I got so many more anecdotes from my trip. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.